Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, bloody toot toot, it's the spoiler train.
Spoiler, spoiler.
I'm running out of ways in which to do this.
Hey, I missed the spoiler train.
Oh, damn it, I'm going to have to wait for the next one, the V-line. What? I hate myself. This is a spoiler warning. If you have not watched The Power Season 1, Episode 7, titled Baptism. Bloody go watch it, check it out, and then come back and have a listen. But you can also listen to the first half of this episode where we'll be chatting of the shit, most likely. I have no idea what we're going to talk about. Nothing is planned, but I reckon it's going to be a really good time. But anyway,
this is a good spoiler warning.
Thanks. This is your spoiler warning. Bye.
Peace. I hate the word.
One leg is gonna fuck it and kick him.
They'll put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario!
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where each week Mish and Zach watch everything starring their favorite, what they thought was a character actor, what soon emerged as a great leading man, who is also a very good character actor. Anyway, they're watching everything that he's in.
What's his name?
And his name is John Leguizamo.
Woo!
My name is Zachary Ruane. Zachary Ruane.
That's hard.
It is a lot of
whatever.
Zachary Ruane, who you might know as when he's tired, he even struggles to pronounce his own name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm joined by Mish Witrup, who you might know as when she's tired.
I like to tell people how to pronounce my last name, which is just Witrup. People really struggle with it. People look at it and they freak out. It's like, honestly, like more often than not, people get it wrong. And I don't think it's that difficult. It's just read what you see. Except I guess it is. A lot of people go Witrup or Withrup.
Witrup.
Yeah, it's just Witrup.
Yeah, Witrup.
Yeah, you want to know a fun fact about my last name?
What?
My great-grandfather was moving to America.
I know.
You knew this?
No, I didn't.
Oh, from Denmark. I think it was my great-grandfather. And didn't want to give out his last name. Didn't know why, but when they asked him to put his last name, he put down the town that he grew up in Denmark called Witrup or Witrup.
Witrup.
And so that's how we got it. I have no idea.
But you're real.
Yeah. So if there are any Witrups out there, we're probably related because it was just this one guy who made up his town name, unless somebody else did it. It's not a very common last name though.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thanks. You doing well?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Hey, can I start with a fact about The Power? Can I? It's not jumping into the episode.
I'd love that.
But it's about the show The Power.
Yeah.
Because I think it could open up a fun little conversation.
Please.
So I went on the Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
So Wikipedia is like an encyclopedia.
I've heard about it.
Yeah. And I went on
it's the thing I'm not on. I don't think I'm on Wiki.
No, it's...
It's one of those, that's when you know you've made it moments.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big moment.
Mm.
But I'm not, as an individual, I'm not on Wiki.
Really?
No. Sure, no. All right. So let me find it. Fun fact, casting.
Mm.
I was reading about, firstly, all female writers room. That's fun. That's cool.
Mm.
But then I was reading about casting. In late October 2019, Leslie Mann was cast as Margot Cleary-Lopez.
What?
Then Moana, then John Leguizamo, then...
Well, he was cast as Toni Collette's character.
Mm. In February, Rainn Wilson was cast as Daniel Dandin.
John Leguizamo's?
No, not John Leguizamo, the senator.
Yeah.
But then he dropped out and was replaced by Tim Robbins.
Oh, my God.
The rest of the cast formed. John Leguizamo was in it. He's already been cast. In May 2022, I think there was COVID delays and stuff. In May 2022, it was reported that Mann and Robbins had dropped out of the series. In August, it was announced that their roles would be assumed by Toni Collette and Josh Charles, respectively.
That is fascinating.
So it was originally Leslie Mann as Margot, who I can see.
Leslie Mann and John Leguizamo were going to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Leslie Mann. I was thinking of someone else.
Yeah, Leslie Mann of...
I was thinking, hold on, I'll tell you exactly
Mother of Maud and Iris.
Oh, my God.
Wife of Judd.
I was thinking you're going to fucking... I'm an idiot. I'm so stupid.
Leslie Nelson?
I was thinking of Leslie Jordan.
Who's Leslie Jordan?
That guy. And I was like, didn't he just die? Like,
Leslie Jordan?
Leslie Jordan is this, like... fantastic, but like Merrick, he's an actor that does a lot of very camp, about 5'2",
amazing.
Does a lot of stuff on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Amazing.
I thought you were talking about Leslie Jordan. I'm such a dumb fuck.
That's an amazing, because Leslie Mann
is phenomenal.
She's a great actor.
Yeah.
Would have been really interesting. What I love about Leslie Mann to Toni Collette. How can I beat what you thought I was saying?
I know. I'm so sorry. That is so odd. And then I was like, hold on. So John Leguizamo was going to be in a relationship with Leslie Jordan? And I was like, that's a weird choice.
And then you had to work through all the plot.
Yeah, and I was like, but hold on a second. Like, the whole, it's meant, what?
He doesn't have the estrogen levels to get the electricity powers.
I'm so stupid.
No, Leslie Mann. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
Because she's so different to Toni Collette.
Yeah, would have been very interesting to watch.
But I think it would have worked. It's one of those things where, like, I love that Toni Collette's in this. But, like, Leslie Mann is so different that I just work through it and I go, yeah.
Mm.
She would have just done it differently.
Yeah, I'm personally very happy it's Toni.
I'm super happy it's Toni.
Mate, I sit in front of you right now with what is essentially... a Toni Collette tattoo.
Mm.
I went and got it, baby. I got that tat.
But now, what does it say?
So it says, I'm with Muriel. It's on my upper arm.
Love it.
It's right there.
I'm with Muriel. That's great.
I wouldn't say it's an ode to Toni Collette as much as it is a very representative thing of, obviously it's from the movie, but it's much more about like female friendship and never being alone and whatnot. But it's also a little...
You don't have a tattoo from This Is 40.
No, that's true. I don't. or I'm 17 again. Wait, is that This Is 40? No, she's done a lot of movies with numbers in it.
Yeah, she loves a number movie.
Yeah.
No, Leslie Mann would have been great. I love that Toni Collette's in it because I love Toni Collette.
Same.
I did a post the other day where I said this series is like opioids to... a fan of a certain kind of actor.
Yeah.
Because like John Leguizamo and Toni Collette together is a treat.
I just can't believe it. Like I honestly still pinch myself. I'm like, because they are two of my like favourite actors ever. It's like whenever you see two of your favourites do something together and they do it well.
In a way it makes more sense when I go, oh, they cast Leslie Mann.
Yeah.
Then they did a whole bunch of casting around Leslie Mann. Then they lost Leslie Mann.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, okay, who's at a level that can keep that Amazon will still be happy with, and then replace Leslie Mann with. I can sort of see how they landed on that more than if they'd built it from Toni Collette.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I love that it landed on Toni Collette. I think it's so
just
interesting.
Just being able to see the two of them together. That's an interesting... I don't think we've talked about it, considering how much we've talked about how much we love Toni and John. Who I'd love to hear your opinion on really, really good chemistry on screen for a couple. Like, that you can think of in a movie where you're just like, the two of them together was just, like, electric.
I think that Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler in The Wedding Singer is just, like, perfect. So lovely.
Yeah.
You know, like where just immediately it feels right.
Oh, yeah.
She's so likable, but he's so likable.
Yeah.
But that's a great one.
Yeah, absolutely. Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis in Thelma and Louise.
Great chemistry.
Really good chemistry.
Yeah. This is a good one.
This is an odd one, but I always think of it when I think of chemistry. Nicolas Cage and Cher in Moonstruck.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Genuinely, who would have thought? But the two of them together is perfection.
Yeah.
And you'll never see it again. They'll never do anything together again, no. I'm sure. But it's just the most... If you've not seen that movie, I don't think that that movie gets enough street cred.
Yeah.
I feel like it was very popular when it came out.
Yeah.
Like she got nominated for an Oscar for it, I believe. Did she win for that? No, she won for Silkwood, I think. That movie is like one of the most beautiful like stories.
I think I talked about it on the podcast when we watched that other Italian one. It's the best Italian dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Olympia Dukakis in that movie is...
I haven't seen it in a while. I watched it on a plane, but it was very good.
It's just, there's this scene outside... This is ridiculous. No one's going to want to hear this, but fuck it. Watch Moonstruck. It's really good. There's this scene after they've gone on a date and he's like basically talking about why he loves her and why, and she's engaged to somebody else, and he's like, we need to do this together. We need to hook up, essentially. Like, we need to continue being together. And he's like, it's just so well scripted, and it's just, and he basically is just like, we have been put on earth to ruin ourselves and love the wrong people. And it's just the most beautiful. Oh my God. Sorry. I've made no sense at all. It's just such a phenomenal film.
Yeah.
I love that movie. But the chemistry between Nicolas Cage and Cher
is
fucking great. Do you want another one?
Oh, this is good. I'm struggling to think.
I've got heaps. Ones. John Travolta and Kirstie Alley in Look Who's Talking.
Hey, that's good.
That's a real... had really good chemistry.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of any, and not because I'm just struggling. I'm struggling to think of good chemistries.
Really? God, I've got plenty.
Do you know who's good?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of the movie. I think it's called Supernova. It's Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's who it is. I'll try and find the name of it.
Oh, that's quite nice.
It's
like
a very
that.
Different kind of chemistry, but it's like they play an old couple, and one of them is not well, and it's sort of a really sad little, very small story.
Mm.
It's not spicy. It's not a spicy chemistry, but they are so beautiful in it. The way they... And I don't know how they did it. I don't know if it was like just, it's called Supernova. I don't know if they like worked it out. I don't know if they did exercises, but they're comfortable with each other. The way they like hold each other, there's just this like.
They're playing partners.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's just this comfort in how they play it that is just, I don't think I've ever seen a long-term couple represented so beautifully.
And oh, it's love just,
there's
that.
No, like, because, you know, I feel like when you're working with another actor, the touch and everything is, you want to be really careful not to be inappropriate, and there's a sort of, you know, but they just touch and they're in each other. Really beautiful.
Oh, I love that.
Really beautiful. Yeah. So there you go. Tucci and Firth. Of course they're good. It's Tucci and Firth.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like you take Tucci and Firth.
What are you going to get? Of course you're going to get that.
Another really great one, Ruane and Witchrop.
Friend goals.
No, that's like, I think Toni Collette and Rachel Griffiths in Muriel's Wedding is some of the best.
Have you seen Succession?
No.
Mish.
No, I have not.
Mish.
Mm.
It's in the final season now. It's so good. Mm. It's only 4 seasons.
Mm.
It is. It's the best written television. I think it's in the top 5 ever.
Oh, wow,
best
really?
Best written television. It's so funny, and characters, like scenes say so much, and characters are always really... It's really incredibly written. But I think that I want to say that Sarah Snook and Matthew McFadden, I forgot his name for a second.
Oh, yeah.
But they play a couple in it, and they've got something.
I love that.
They've got like, and it's really only emerging in this season, like, because they're not a great, it's not like that they're, it's not, it's just, Yeah, it's really nice.
No, I love that.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of more spicy ones.
I just love it. I love when I see two, like, I'd love a bit of good bloody chemistry.
Yeah. It's me really great. Happy. It's really rare.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't, no, because that's the thing. You can take a really, really good actor and another really, really good actor, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get great chemistry.
It's where casting becomes important, hey?
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, who's good at it?
Like, good at casting?
Yeah, just good at...
I mean, whoever put together Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey did something very good in 10 Things I Hate About You, but then they did Fool's Gold, shit film. But, like, no, there was something there where you're just like, oh, okay, well, that's... Whoever put Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, although Meg I think Ryan, Adam Sandler Meg was friends Ryan with Drew Barrymore. And
Tom Hanks.
Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal.
Oh, yeah.
That was phenomenal. That's
that
actually...
lives or dies. Well, that lives or dies on the on those, chemistry.
Literally, it's like when Harry met Sally. If Harry meets Sally and there's no chemistry, what a shit film.
But particularly because the whole film is about them not... Like, that whole film is about them not being together. So if you don't feel the fact that they should be...
Yeah, oh, my God, absolutely. I think When Harry Met Sally might be my favourite rom-com.
Yeah.
That's a big statement because I do love a rom-com.
I think it comes from an era... when rom-coms were not, something happened in the last 20 years where it's been diminished and that people think it's only about the romance. Like rom-coms used to be where you would go for good writing and good characters.
Well, yeah, you're right. I think a lot of rom-coms, especially in the early noughties, they did this thing where rom-coms were a situational thing.
Mm.
Throwing two people into a crazy situation and how are they going to get out of the situation without falling in love?
Mm.
Whereas the ones that were done in the 80s and the 90s were a lot more about two people forming a connection, not because they were thrown
and
into
multiple
like,
people. Yeah. It was like an opportunity to just have good writing and good characters and it ended happily. It ended on the... like.
That's a beautifully written script too. When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, it's just great.
Nora
writing.
Ephron, fucking, she could write a rom com, man. That, like, honestly, that's like, I love little snippets. like I love my little Moonstruck snippet. I love little snippets from When Harry Met Sally. That last monologue he does.
Oh yeah.
Spoiler alert. When he goes to the New Year's Eve party and he explains to her why he loves her.
Yeah.
And why it's different. It's just, it's so, it's not. There's nothing fancy in what he's saying to her.
It's so beautiful.
I used to, like from very young, that I used to listen to that monologue and be like, I just want that one day.
Yeah.
Like, and like I found it, which is very nice. But like, no, to me, it's just the perfect, like if you're sad or you've just gone through a breakup or if you're pining for someone, it's just, it's the have a little teary and eat a bowl of popcorn kind of monologue because it just really hits. It's just hits so good.
Yeah.
I fucking love a well-written rom-com. I'm a romantic person at heart.
Richard Curtis obviously did some great ones as well. He did Four Weddings and a Funeral and Notting Hill and Love Actually.
Yes,
bitch. But Notting Hill is like so wonderfully written. And it's so much more. You're so right about two people. That's a story about two people at different points in their lives. It's not so much about them falling in love as it is two people in different and how they.
That's a very. Whoever cast those films as well, like maybe not so much Notting Hill, but Four Weddings and a Funeral, who would have thought Hugh Grant and Andy McDowell?
Because, like, Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts is the same.
Yeah.
I think I've said this a million times. Hugh Grant did, like, you know those career retrospective things that they do?
Yes.
There's a few different magazines. Have I told you about this?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Hugh Grant did one and he talked about how he did Four Weddings and a Funeral. And then he was offered Notting Hill and he talks about how he nearly said no to Notting Hill because he was like, it's the same character. And then Richard Curtis was like, no, it's a very different character. This guy is much more and he described how he was a different kind of character. Mm. He's much less foppish. He's much more like, and he talked it through and then Hugh Grant, the way he says it is so perfect. He's like, so I agreed to it. And, of course, I just did the same thing. Like, just this whole thing of him being like, oh, no, being convinced and then just doing the same thing.
I wonder if Hugh Grant is a cunt because he plays it up. He plays up the I'm a big cunt and no one likes to work with me thing. Yeah, but he really loves to, like, there's interviews where he's asked, like, tell us about your famous leading ladies. And everyone, every single time he's had to do it, you can just tell he hates the question because it is like a, like, what, you want me to assess my work colleagues? And every time he pulls one off, they're just like, he's like, oh, she hates me. Like, yeah, oh, she really hates me. And this one here, she's like, she liked me for a bit and then as time progressed, she stopped liking me so much. Now I think she hates me. He's just, I wonder.
The part of me that thinks he probably is a bit of an asshole, but the part of me that thinks he isn't is the fact that he's so happy to own it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I find that the.
That's what I mean. That's why I'm like, more, I wonder, really.
If someone who's truly, truly an asshole. Mm. Is really on and nice and cool.
Yes.
And you know.
They're like in this like denial state or desperate to have people not see them as this, like I don't see myself as an elitist. You know what I mean? It's like, but you are. Like you're a multi-fucking millionaire. Yeah. You only date models and you live in a villa. Like, no, but you are. And it's like, yeah, I know what you mean. And they'll come across as like this Mr. Nice guy.
To say that you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Makes me think. He's less likely to be. He might be though, because you hear stories about him. My guess is he's a grump.
Yeah,
and he's a bit of a prick,
and he's super British and an American.
But I think that's the biggest thing. I think he's British. I think it's like that interview he did at the Oscars where people were like, he was so rude, and he just wasn't.
No, he wasn't at all.
He was just like, no. This is weird that I've been asked to do this.
Yeah,
and he's being funny.
Yeah,
and he's being funny.
Yeah. I think that that's about right.
And I think that like 90% of what people think is him being rude is just him being British. Truly.
Yeah.
Because sarcasm and irony.
I just think he has, my guess is on Hugh Grant is that he has self-awareness.
Yeah.
I think he is aware that the industry that he is in, of the like label that people puts on him, and he kind of uses them.
He's so funny.
He's really funny. Like, he's done some fucking iconic roles. Yeah. And Notting Hill is probably my favourite Hugh Grant film.
He's so good
in it. He's so good in it. Yeah. And him and Julia Roberts are so good together.
So much chemistry.
So much. But the Andy McDowell one really blows my mind. Whoever was casting Four Weddings and a Funeral, because that movie is so funny. Whoever was casting that, fuck, that's got a sad scene. And, oh, God, I just remembered.
But do you know what I mean? It's just good writing, good scene. It's like, have you seen About Time?
Yes.
Did you like About Time?
That's the one with Rachel McAdams, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Sci-fi. Nice. But that's one where... I love that it's like I rewatched it. Like the first time I watched it, I was like, "Wow, it's not a love story at all. It's more about the father and the son." And then on rewatching, I'm like, "No, it is a love story.
I think it's a love story."
But I love that it's this idea of like that. That's the last one where it's like you market it as a rom com, you put it out there as a rom com, but that structure is an opportunity to just do good writing.
Yeah.
But that is a beautiful story. Like that's that makes me sad.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Hey, should we talk about the power?
No, absolutely not. What we need to do is go to an ad.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, welcome back. If you didn't get an ad, we're poor. If you did get an ad, Tom's getting paid next month. Okay, let's do the blurb. Great. Episode 7 of The Power is titled Baptism, something I've never received or taken part in.
Oh.
Ever. In this episode, Roxy takes on the role of teacher for many young girls who are struggling to access and control their power. This was a really nice and positive progression for Roxy's character, but she also uses her powers to threaten men who owe her dad money. There is a really interesting scene between Tatiana and her assistant where they dress up and dance around before Tatiana forces a kiss on her reluctant assistant who wants Tatiana's help to free her brother from jail. Genuinely, I'm not exactly sure what was happening in that scene and would love to know your opinion. Zach, I'm looking at Zach, not you guys. You can let me know what you think too. Meanwhile, Moana's boyfriend reveals that he was born intersex and has now got the power after Moana accidentally shocked him at school one day. At first, she is super conflicted and uncomfortable, but they later kiss among some fairy lights that then explode when things get a bit horny. A lot of heavy shit is going down with Ali and the Angela Bassett voice in her head as she essentially builds a cult-like following of women who see her as their leader. That's fair to say, isn't it? That's a really heavy story. John is only in this episode as a flashback to the previous episode, but he is perfect because it's Johnny Legs and we love him. A lot more happens in this show. It's a really hard series to write blurbs on.
It is.
It's something like every scene, something new is happening that is fucking loaded.
It's the only TV show I've ever seen where I'm like, you know what? This could have done with a bit more space.
Yeah.
But I like how loaded it is. I like how fast it moves.
Yeah.
But there are times where I'm like, there's so much plot that I could just sit in it a little more.
But also, I do feel like this is the first time in this whole series, this episode, where I was like, okay, you're all building to something now. I'd like something to happen.
Do you know what I feel? Slightly different but kind of the same. What number episode is this?
Seven.
I'm like, how are you going to wrap this up?
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. They have built so much.
It's build.
So, and there's only two episodes to go.
Yeah.
And I was hoping in this episode that something, like I feel like every episode is building and I just was kind of, it's the first time in the whole series so far where I was like, got to the end and I was like, oh, come on. Like I wanted something more, just something, just a little bit of something, like not a conclusion, but a next step. And it felt like it was just more building, like more, we're taking a lot of air in and I haven't exhaled yet. That's a delicious analogy.
No, and it's where I from my experience, I don't have an issue with
The build,
right? I think that's a great point and I can see how you feel like that. For me, I don't feel like that. But I go, this is getting hard for you to wrap up.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you going
to
do?
Well, I'll be damned if we get to episode 9, because there's 9 episodes in this
series. I thought
this
was a limited series. I didn't realize this was a season 1, and I suspect it might be.
I think it might be.
That's what I think is happening right now.
But it's based, I have not read the book, but it's based on a book.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I'm very interested to see, but I'm assuming there's going to be a lot that happens in the next 2 episodes if by the end of episode 9 we have got answers. Because right now I don't have a lot of answers. There's no conclusion to anything. Everything is still building. And I'm just – I don't think I can take much more of this. No, I just mean that if I watch episode 8 next week –
And it's still
building. I think there might be a part of me that, like, if I wasn't recording it, I would be kind of like, okay, I'm going to take a break from this series.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't mean I don't love it at all. I do. I love it. But if the next episode doesn't give me something big, although that being said, a lot happened in episode 6.
Yeah. I just think it's not so much – if they keep building through the next episode and it culminates well in episode 9, great.
Okay, I hear you.
I'm just struggling to see how they will do that.
I get you.
If we build to a cliffhanger, I'm going to be like, just because I didn't think that's what I was watching.
Yep.
I thought I was watching something that was going to tell something like a full story.
Yep.
But if we just get to a cliffhanger... A real cliffhanger, if it's like build to like, I'm trying to think of the words here. Like sometimes things end on the beginning of something big, but that's how it's meant to end.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If we get to like a who knows where this will go, but it's okay if we don't get a season two, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I just don't know. It's like structurally, I feel like we've been in act one the whole time.
Yes.
If they pull it off, I think it's really cool if they can pull it off. But there's like, there is like her story. I'm like, how is her story going to relate to everyone else's story?
Particularly the girl
in the orphanage and
Ali
with the nuns.
Yeah. I feel like Tony and John's story is really kind of playing out in a very traditional sense of like a series. You know what I mean? Like lots happening, but there's a lot of movement. But it feels like that's the only one that we've kind of been able to have that it's having that kind of trajectory. The rest seem to just be a build, which is great because we love John and Tony. And they weren't in this episode. I'm interested to see like if there's a reason for that, if there's a reason why we've had to follow them very differently to the way we followed everybody else's story.
Like, are they going to come together? And I don't need...
Yeah.
I don't need them to come together neatly.
Mm.
I think sometimes stories like this bring everyone together in a way that's a little wonky. But they are coming together. Like they are, you know, like the Nigerian reporter is now like in the Eastern European story. There's like a sense of, okay, these stories might be coming to something.
Yes.
I'm just intrigued by how they do it in 100%, two episodes.
100%. In particular, Tatiana, right? She showed up in episode two, I think.
Maybe even three.
Maybe three. And it was like, ooh, what's this about? Her scene in this episode, I'm also sounding like I'm not enjoying it. I am. I did enjoy watching this. I really did. But it's just the first time in this series where I've been like, what? Her scene, one that she had with her assistant, felt like it was from a different show.
Oh, I
loved it. It was really interesting.
Yeah, no,
it felt really different from anything else that this show has done.
It's the stuff in this show that I love is this ambiguous. The show, when it's at its best, is, I think, ambiguous and vibey and just sort of feeling its way through things. I think when it's at its worst or when I'm least on board with it is when it's neat. You know, like even Urban Docs, the online guy, that he's like responsible for everything rather than just he's one of many things that are a turn against the women. Like, I feel like this show is strong enough to be more ambiguous in how things link and how. So I really love that scene.
It was just interesting.
Murky. It's so murky.
Murky is right because, like, I had an idea about Tatiana, but every episode is this real, like, that, and it's really interesting and I love it because it's not easy to do, I don't think, but there's this real strain between being super invested in her well-being and also thinking she's a bit fucked. Like,
yeah.
Or that she might be a villain type character because it's this strain between both. It's like, I really want her to succeed and I really want her and I'm invested in her, but also she might be awful. Like... it's so interesting.
It's where this show, I think, is at its best, where it's like that it's not easy.
Yeah. This is interesting.
This is an episode that really starts to lean into there's no good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
And you know, I mentioned intersectionality a few episodes ago. I don't want to, because I'm not smart enough to, but. But there's something to, particularly Tatiana, is that the character's name? That she is both a victim and in a position of power.
Power, yeah.
And really profoundly in both.
Yeah.
And
isn't it fascinating it to see
into
that,
how tough that is.
Yeah, and I don't think that filmmakers or television makers or whatever are often brave enough to tackle that. Like, it's a very brave thing to do is to take those two things and put them into one character.
And to let it sit in the discomfort. I think there was a point in the end of that scene where I thought they were going to give us relief and give us clarity in, but it ends really like
disturbingly
and so problematically, and I love that it sits in the discomfort.
For people who aren't watching the show but are choosing to listen to this, hello, watch the show; it's very good. But in this particular scene, I mentioned it in the blurb. The assistant character, which is the character that a few episodes ago Tatiana forced, essentially, like
to give her her power.
They have this moment where they all start, like, where her assistant and herself dress up in her clothes and dance around in a very kind of manic way, like, and pose for each other, and like it felt very art housey. and then Tatiana ends up like dominating physically this assistant. And it's just really, it was really jarring and very disturbing and fascinating to watch, but it felt very like it was a different show.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't expect it. I guess that's the best way of putting it. I was just watching it, enjoying myself, and then this scene happened and it was just like, oh, whoa, I felt deeply uncomfortable, which I'm assuming I was meant to. I felt deeply uncomfortable and I didn't know how to feel about Tatiana. And in discussing it with you now, it's kind of like, well, you're right. There are no good guys or bad guys. I don't need to always put that onto the characters or the makers of whatever it is I'm watching, that there needs to be that. But I think I'm just so used to that. And
we've gone through a bit of an age where that's how things have been.
Yeah, there's
entertainment for a long time. And very moral. The idea that you have moral characters. Well,
it's like what we were saying last week about John Leguizamo's character, how he's turned around and it's like, oh, God, I hope he's not bad now. It's like, no, he's just dealing with some human shit.
Well, that was sort of what I said last week, you know, is that I just hope that whatever he does, it's done empathetically and it's not like he just goes bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm okay with him doing the wrong thing so long as it's written well.
With some truth, yeah.
And it's true. Like Margot is a character as well, is like, it's a show, I think, about power in a lot of ways, and like the idea of like she's, you know, running for Senate, that happened last episode, and it's like the question, like her character started out quite morally ambiguous, like what has she given up, what for what reason is she doing it, and it started going down a path where I thought, you know, oh, she's going to be like the goodie. But no, I think this is a show that sits in that discomfort. Like, like there's that bit where they're going, is it Tunde?
Yeah, Tunde.
The journalist, he's going, hey, we've pretty much learnt all the characters' names. We did all right. Just took us a few eps. Boy, he's going down a river to meet these freed These women that were, you know, under, like, can't think of the word, but bad. They were in a bad situation. And then talking about burning down villages, and there's this shot of these men that are, like, now refugees.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, complex because you go, here's these men that are refugees and they're kids, and you're like, oh, that's tough, but then it's like, but have some empathy for the people, you know, it's like, and what they potentially have done, and it's like, you know, why are we now feeling empathy for these male characters when it's just a show that lives in the gray.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated to see where it goes.
Well, what I think is really great about this show, and what I think is very brave of this show, of what it's done, and I'm assuming is what it wanted us to do, is it really makes you think, you know. No, but it does, like that kind of like the concept goodies and baddies and stuff like that, but in real human life form. It's like there isn't, we mentioned it actually like a month ago, and I've taken something you said to me a month ago on pod, like while we were
on pod
on pod, and I've used it in fact I used it in my show a couple of times, where you were like, everyone just needs to chill out and be nice. And we're talking about empathy and having empathy, like, you know, you can agree and or disagree with people, but there's not enough empathy in people anymore. And I think this show really makes you think about, you might not love what they've done, but you can go, they're human and I feel sorry for them.
Empathize with them. It's the difference between empathy and sympathy.
Yeah.
You don't have to like what they do. Mm. You don't have to like the character. But well-written characters, the writer has to, for the most part, sometimes a villain is just great, but a well-written character, the writer has to empathize with them. Yeah. Have you seen The Boys?
No.
Another great Amazon show.
My partner
show.
Is constantly trying to It's really good, Mish,
and I really think you would love
My
it.
My partner's constantly
it's
trying to get me
It's super well-written. It's one of those ones that I thought it would be good.
Mm.
I thought I would like It's great. Like, yeah.
It's on my list. It
yeah,
is on my
list. Yeah, and it's just like one of those things where, like, if it had just been a satire of, I think I've said this before, but if it had just been a satire of comic book movies, that would have been good enough. Like, it succeeds in that. But it's also, it uses the tropes of superheroes to be a satire on America and capitalism and, like, the world we live in now, which is, like, a bonus, and it's super effective at that. But then on top of it, the characters are really, really well written and empathetic, and you're like, this is like two or three layers more than I asked of it. Like, I would have loved this show, and that's The Boys. But there's a character in that is just, and I don't want to give away which one it is, but there's a character in that I think is one of the most reprehensible villains of any, like, he's in the top 10 villains of all time, I think. He's just awful, and he's evil, and he's, but the actor, I heard, didn't think of him as a villain, thought of him as like an anti-hero, thought of him as someone who was really complex, just didn't engage with him as a villain, didn't engage with the fact that he was playing a villain. So he plays it so much more empathetically and thus makes the character so much more evil and engaging. And on top of that, right, this character is evil, nasty, nasty, nasty character. But that he doesn't have a reason for doing things in a way. It's not like, I think sometimes, you know, Disney does this a lot where it's like, oh, here's the bad person and they're doing the bad thing. So the way to make them empathetic is for them to go, oh, I really, really believe that the right thing to do is this. And like they give them all these scenes where they're like, do you know what I mean? Where they're like, oh, even though you think I'm bad, I'm doing it because of this reason. This character doesn't have reasons, but he has a really fucked up, like his upbringing, how he came into the world, who he is really fucked up.
Mm.
So there's empathy for the character. There's there's not sympathy. We're never ever asked to like agree with what he's doing. We're never asked to understand what he's doing, but we are asked to sort of like empathize with why he would be the way he is. And that's just good writing.
Yeah, it is.
Like that's just, and that's any time I talk about this show and I go, oh, I hope that, it's just, I hope that they keep that because that's what's so good about this show so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that everyone is kind of
very human characters. Yeah. Very interesting. Isn't it cool that we're watching a show that makes us think like this?
Yeah, it's great.
Because it doesn't happen often anymore. I think you're like, it's interesting to think that I think we're coming maybe out of an era where there was the goodies and the baddies. And you could either support the good boys or the bad boys. And it's nice to kind of have something a little bit more complex. Yeah, I like it. I think I like a little bit of humanity in what I watch.
Yeah,
I like
it's
to be.
Tough.
I like to be. No, yeah, it is. It's hard to watch
because like you want to just like someone.
I literally fucking 15 minutes ago was saying how like I just don't know where to place Tatiana. I don't know. Like, is it good? Do I like her? Do I not like? It's like you can just feel both ways about her. Like, it's fine.
She just is.
She just is. She has like based on her story that we have already like gotten up to 7 episodes. I could literally not imagine what she has been through. How hard her life has been, what has brought her to this place. No, I don't agree with how she's treating her assistant. It's fucked. I also cannot understand how she could be in that headspace, but I believe that she is.
Yeah.
And I can empathize with that. It's easy.
Mish.
Fucking easy.
I love when this podcast sometimes is for you, the listener, and it's sometimes for us as creatives.
Yeah.
It's our little journey.
Well, it's like genuinely.
Because you're a writer and it's like, I think this is a nice thing for you to.
My favourite thing to write is relationships. And I don't mean like romantic relationships. I mean, I like dialogue.
Mm.
I really like two people in a room having a chat. It's my favourite thing to write.
Mm.
And it's important to me that things that I write or the people that I write about or that the characters that I create are relatable, but relatable in every sense. I don't want it to be relatable because they're the heroes or anti-heroes. I want it to be like a real thing. I love when I see good writing and I'm just like, well, fuck, I wish I wrote that. It's very cool. Yeah, anyway,
great.
We are really in a reflective era, aren't we?
I know. We tried really hard to not be last week, but here we are.
Should we make some fart sounds to bring them back? Oh, did it pop off?
It's all right. You don't need to send us a DM saying we don't have to do the fart sounds. Yeah, we do it for us.
Yeah, I enjoy the pop-off sounds. In fact, here's a little fun fact. When Zach and I came into the studio a couple of hours ago, we were sitting in silence eating our sushi, and I just looked up at Zach. I'm like, did you fart? He was just like, nah, why? And I was like, oh, it just smells a bit like fart. And he's like, oh, does it smell bad or like fart? And I was like, oh, I like fart. And that was the conversation. We've not discussed it since, but I just thought I'd bring it up again.
And I need to be very clear. I said unequivocally I didn't fart.
Would you have admitted it if you did?
To you, yes.
Yo-y?
To you, yes.
Okay.
I would have admitted it.
What if we had a guest in here?
But, well, I would have been upset with you for asking.
Oh, really?
Someone.
What if it was Michelle Brazier?
Then I would have been like.
What if it was Jude Pearl?
I would have been upset with you.
Yeah, Jude Pearl's great. You don't want to upset Jude Pearl.
I think in terms of the fart thing, I may have denied it. Maybe. I probably wouldn't have. I probably would have admitted it. I may have denied it. I wouldn't have emphatically denied it. So the way I was like, there is no way that that's my fart, was just like, I was like, thinking back, no, I have not farted in this room.
Yeah.
Cool. Like I had a real clear.
It'd be an awful room to fart in because it's quite like enclosed.
There's nothing worse than when you fart in an enclosed space, elevator or plane, and then someone comes into that space immediately. Like, that's awful. Just a nightmare.
I fart at the supermarket a lot.
You got to fart on a plane, on a long-haul flight.
I like to get up to do it, though. I don't like to fart next to whoever I'm sitting next to, unless it's my partner.
My partner
is the first partner I've ever had that I openly fart in front of. Like openly, like yeah. I will just fart.
Yeah, yeah, that's.
I've farted before and pissed myself laughing. I mean, like I just farted, haha.
Sorry, like a little too.
Whereas I fart and he like just kind of doesn't say anything. You know what I mean?
It's then there's the occasional. I feel like not that one. You know, sometimes you get like you'll fart in front of a partner. It's like that one was too far. Check it. That was too gross of a fart.
Yeah, but I don't do gross farts. All mine are adorable.
You do little toots,
little tooties.
This is my final thought. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the show.
Is it about farts?
Yeah. I did my first ever business class flight, that's something I'm not going to like, you know, if I become a business class person, I don't think I will. It's just too expensive. But I think at some point you've got to not talk about it on podcast. But I'm saying that I did a business class flight because I'm not a business class person.
And you didn't pay for it.
And I didn't pay for it.
Yeah.
This is all like, this all sounds like
you did
like
it illegally.
No, this was, I posted about it was when I went to the Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Premiere, which is very funny because we watched a version of the film that we didn't voice.
And, very, very quickly before you continue the story, I would just like to state I'm not an envious person. I don't feel jealousy. It's just not. I, of course, do like not like a normal person, but it doesn't happen a lot. And I have a lot of friends who are very successful, and I don't feel envy or jealousy. I'm usually just very happy for them. Twice in my life, I have felt jealous of Zach, like genuine envy. Like I wish that was me, and it was when you flew this business class flight. And when you hosted Rage.
Rage?
The Australian music
Rage,
television show.
I will say, go for it. This business class flight thing was because we flew there. We did one day this premiere of the movie we weren't even in. We flew back. I can go into it. I actually went into it on Mr. Sunday Movies a little bit. But, yeah, don't need to be jealous of the week. It's like it's still a really long flight. Okay. You know what I mean?
You're just
still
in a comfy chair.
Yeah, and the reason why I say it is because it's like there's something so funny about business class because you sit there, it's in a comfy chair. They bring you out like food on porcelain plate. and it's real fancy, and they give you wine that like tastes good, and you're like, oh, this is really civilized. And then like, and then you can fully lie down, but then it's like I'm sleeping, even though I'm lying down, I'm lying here while flight attendants walk past me. Like people are just awake and I'm just like asleep, farting. I'm farting.
Did you fart?
Yeah, it's a 14-hour flight. Of course I farted.
You farted in business?
But that's the point. I'm just, it's like there's something like no matter how fancy you make it, long-haul flights are just gross.
Yeah, even Kim Kardashian's farted on a plane, I'm sure.
You got to fart. Have you ever heard that thing that apparently the worst job you can have as a, if you work in a, for an airline, the worst job you can have is opening the door to a long-haul flight?
Oh, does it stink?
Because apparently it's just like, whoosh, like just BO and fart.
I think like the worst job you can have is a fart sniffer.
Is that a job?
No. It's just like, where is he going with this?
Well, like, he's apparently opened the door. But oh, that the reason disgusting. I just say is like, there's just something about having a little nine eyes while people are like walking around you.
Yeah, I know. It's
odd. And you're farting and you just, it's just like.
I can't pathetic. Sleep when other people are around. Like, it's just weird.
Anyway. I can't sleep on flights usually. Yeah.
My leg was Starmo.
He wasn't in it, was he?
He gets one. The last time he wasn't in one, though, he was in it. He was in a little flashback moment.
What was the flashback moment?
To the guy burning. Like, they were reflecting back on it, and he was, like, diving. Like, that was it. That was it. That was all we saw of him was his back, essentially.
Yeah.
So it gets one. I think it could have done with more, like, far more legs. I would have liked to have seen a bit of legs in this ep. But it just gets one. I didn't really feel him too much in this episode.
Yeah. Nah, I agree. One.
Mm. One.
One leg with Starmo.
Yeah. Still great though. Can't wait to watch the next episode. Really hopeful that some fucking big shit happens in episode 8. If you've already watched episode 8 because it is out, you're probably all like, ha ha ha, they're in for a treat or
I wonder how they'll take that.
Exactly. Tom, could you take us away with some fart sounds?
Good.
But after each fart, can you apologize? In different ways.
This has been Leguizamarama. Thanks so much, Mish.
Thank you, Zach. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey.
Sorry. 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 Excuse me. Sorry. Oops, sorry. 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 Oops, soz.